from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Oh, you know it's Fresh Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't so fresh outside, though. There's no sun. Welcome in to the G and Ursula Show. Appreciate you guys for listening. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Even though it's a little bit cloudy, it's still a little bit warmer, and we're still going to have a great weekend. It is Friday, so lots to be excited about.
I didn't notice rain was coming.
Yeah, if you listen to a forecast, you knew. Nick Allard's right on it.
Truth. You want to know why I don't listen to the news when it comes to forecasts and weather?
Why?
Because being a car detailer for so many years, you had to get that out of your mind.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Like rain or shine, you're gonna be out there.
Rain or shine, you need to get this work. You need this vehicle clean. Hey, coming up at 10:33, Stacy Joe from our sister station 710 ESPN will join us to help us understand what will the Seahawks do today with their pick in the NFL draft. But right now, Ursula, is the top three things that everyone needs to know with our guest, Michael Medved.
Number one.
And first of all, we want to welcome Michael. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Ursula. Good morning, G. Good morning.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us. So as you know, Michael, we're just going to dive right into this. Just a month after he unveiled the $2 trillion infrastructure plan, President Biden unveiled an additional $1.8 trillion federal investment in education, childcare, and paid family leave during his first address to Congress on Wednesday. So, as you know, this is called the American Families Plan. What is your take on this?
Well, it's overbidding. I mean, it's too much. And I don't think it's going to work for President Biden. I don't think it's going to work for the country. Because basically there are things within the plan that you could look at and say, well, that's important, that's good. But we're talking about $6 trillion added to what already was a completely unprecedented budget deficit that was left over. And honest to goodness, he needs to compromise with Republicans and get this down to a manageable scale. Otherwise, it's going to damage the economy and it's going to damage his presidency.
Do you think, though, that he is starting at this? To me, the numbers do look a little outrageous. I mean, it is scary to think of that much spending, and you would assume that it's going to be stripped down. But do you think the strategy should have been just go in where you think the Republicans would be much more apt to approve of it?
I think the strategy should have been, look, to talk in terms that the American people could understand, that wouldn't put people to sleep the way that a lot of his speech did, to focus directly on these are the important goals. And by the way, I think one of the most popular things he's hit on is the pre-K.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Providing that school starts for people who want it at age 4 instead of age 5. That's a big deal. And it's a very big deal. If he focused on that, if he focused on basically trying to do something to address the budget other than these complicated, very complicated and very punishing and I think destructive elements to raise taxes. And is he right? Does every American agree with him that rich people should pay their fair share? Yeah. But there could be some acknowledgement that already, right now, most people, including people who earn very well, are paying their fair share. To concentrate on going after the scofflaws who are trying to beat the system or game the system, that would have worked better.
Right.
Okay, can we play one of his points, and then I want you to respond to it. This is
sure.
how to pay for the plan.
How do we pay for my jobs and family plan? I made it clear we can do it without increasing the deficits. Let's start with what I will not do. I will not impose any tax increase on people making less than $400,000. But it's time for corporate America and the wealthiest 1% of Americans to just begin to pay their fair share. Just their fair share. I'm not looking to punish anybody. But I will not add a tax burden, additional tax burden, to the middle class in this country. They're already paying enough.
And so for me, as someone who is, I would consider myself among the middle class or upper middle class, whatever, that sounds good to me. Yes.
Sure, except it's not accurate.
Okay, and so talk about that.
What's not accurate is if you look at the way this is broken down, and liberal economists will agree to this, the top 20% of the population, people who are doing better, already pays the overwhelming majority of personal income taxes. It's close to 75%. And to say that we just want rich people to begin to pay their fair share, it sounds very good as a rhetorical attack. And, of course, people think about, oh, why won't Trump release his tax return? And that brings us back into a whole other area. But this thing that he's saying about anybody who earns less than $400,000 a year has nothing to worry about. First of all, it's $400,000 as household income. So two people who are earning $200,000 each are going to be hit. Secondly, it's not even true. One of the points that we were talking about on the air yesterday is one of the things that happens when you're taxing corporations is bills go up. They have to. For instance, utility companies. Most people don't notice, but with the Trump tax cut, there was a reduction in most people's utility bills. And it wasn't small, because all of a sudden the utility companies had to pay less in taxes. Now, if they're going to go back up in taxes, President Biden says 28% instead of 20%, people are going to find that in their bottom line. And that's not just people earning over $400,000 a year.
Michael, sometimes I have to drum up reasons to be outraged at anything that you say. It's hard to do that, but I'll try.
Here's, okay, good. I love that.
Here's one for you. Why is it that the conversation when talking about the deficit and talk about the budgets and all this stuff, why is it that the conversation is not really centered from the tax breaks, the corporate tax breaks of corporations and those that are wealthy? How come that isn't front and center? Because would you agree that there has been an excess of too much tax breaks for corporations and wealthy people?
Sure, and that's too complicated. What we need to do is go back to, there was a tax reform that was done jointly by Dan Rostenkowski, who was a Democrat, who was chairman of the Raves and Weans Committee, and Bill Bradley, who was a pretty good basketball player, as you may remember.
New York Knicks.
Oh, you bet. And Princeton before that, yeah. and President Reagan. And the whole idea of that tax reform was get rid of some of these loopholes, get rid of some of these special privileges for rich people, or for favored companies, simplify the tax code, make it straight out there with no complicated deductions or files or issues, and then lower the tax rate. And what happened with that tax reform where the top rate was lowered, and it's hard to believe, but the top rate was lowered in one bill immediately from 50% to 28%. And they collected more in taxes, a lot more, because people weren't playing all these games with it. I think our tax system sucks. I think it's awful. But it's
agreed.
Awful it's so damn complicated.
Oh, I've been saying that all week. Yes. Now, before we get to number two, yes or no, does trickle-down economics work?
No, and nobody ever favored trickle-down economics. Trickle-down economics is not a phrase that was ever used by President Reagan or any other conservative. It's a stupid idea. It's basically an insult. What supply-side economics is about is what President Kennedy said, a rising tide lifts all boats. In other words, if people at the bottom are doing better, people at the top will do better. If people at the top are doing better, people at the bottom will do better. It's a question of the general direction of the economy. And we have a chance now, and that's what's so frustrating about this right now. You look at all the prognosticators, 2021 could be an epic year for economic growth. And I just hope the politicians don't blow it.
All right.
Okay, we're going to go to number two.
Number two.
Oh, Senator Tim Scott. The GOP decided to choose Senator Tim Scott. I don't know why they chose him, but they did. They chose Senator Tim Scott to be the one to give the GOP's response to President Biden's address. Let me ask this. What were your thoughts when he starts his speech off by saying our president, and he starts off a little bit and then he goes into, quote, our president seems like a good man. His speech was full of good words. Michael, do you have a problem with him saying he seems like a good man?
No. Why should I? What's wrong with saying that?
Do you think that Tim Scott knows whether or not President Biden is a good man or not? Or was this just kind of a way, you know, it's like the talking points to kind of keep the divide a little bit? Do you think Tim Scott thinks that he's a good man?
Yes, I do. And I think Tim Scott is a good man. And
so why was it so hard for him to say that? Why couldn't he say, hey, look, President Biden is a good man? What, you don't see the difference in that? He seems like a good man?
Okay, I will agree. If I had been writing the speech, I probably would have said President Biden is a good man. And by the way, I think he is. But I don't think you can blame Tim Scott for that. What I liked about the speech, and the reason I thought this is a terrible situation for any politician to be in. You remember Marco Rubio and his water bottle, Bobby Jindal looking at the wrong camera and fretting. People are usually embarrassed by their presentations answering the State of the Union address or a joint session address like this one was. But Tim Scott helped himself a lot, because I think what he did is he put a new face on conservatism, which is reminiscent of what President Reagan said, which is, I'm a conservative, but I'm not angry about it. There's nothing angry or indignant or apocalyptic about his speech. It was basically, come, let us reason together. Let's get together. Let's make some deals and let's make some progress.
Yeah, agreed.
And frankly, I'll bet you that President Biden was probably grateful for that speech, because it's a different tone than you've been hearing from a lot of Republicans right now. And by the way, I think we're going to have, I'm going to say it right here, it's controversial.
Come okay? on. I know where you're going. Go ahead.
We are going to have in 2024, for the first time in American history, both major parties with black nominees.
I told you, what did I tell? I told G, I said that people are talking about him as a presidential candidate.
Absolutely.
Oh, and absolutely.
And Kamala Harris versus Tim Scott. And
G, get back over here. She is practically out the door. He's just laughing and think this is so far-fetched. I absolutely agree.
I knew where you were going, Michael. I love you, man. I knew where you were going.
But why do you find that so hard to believe?
It's not going
to
happen.
Tim Scott
will not be the leading for the Republican Party.
Why?
Why not?
I have not seen any example of outside of the Republican Party placing Tim Scott in that spot to do that. I have not seen anything lately from Republican leaders that shows me that they actually do care about those in the black population. Give me examples that I've been trying to see that. I have not seen that recently.
But you know that in the last election, President Trump actually did very well, better than he was expected to do.
Ursula, choose your words wisely. Yeah.
I am choosing, but he did better in some populations, yes.
Yeah, President Trump got 12% of the black vote, which means that, you know, the Joe Biden had 88%, so it was not
relatively
like a great,
speaking.
Relatively speaking, though, you're right, yes. Ursula, entirely. The point about this is that, by the way, I was kind of taken with the fact that President Bush admitted that he wrote in a black candidate for president last time. He wrote in Condoleezza Rice.
Yes.
And if you take a look, again, leave aside the Republican Party leadership. Yeah. I do not believe that South Carolina, which is a very conservative state, Basically, the people are looking and saying, boy, I wish we hadn't nominated that black guy for, elected that black guy for the House of Representatives. We hadn't elected that black guy by a landslide for the U.S. Senate. I do believe that South Carolina and every other state and every corner of this great country wants to put the days of a racist, race is everything America behind them. And I believe that what Tim Scott said that is so controversial, where he said, I'm going to tell it to you straight, America is not a racist country. I believe that most Americans will agree with that sentiment. And by the way, Kamala Harris agreed with it when she was
President asked. Biden agreed with it, and then G agreed with it yesterday.
Well, hold on. Hey, Michael, I agree with that. But I need you to do me a favor, though, since you're talking about Tim Scott and the possibility of him being the top ticket holder for the Republican Party. Give me something that the Republican Party has done. So if I'm black, right, and you can point to something that they've done to make me feel like, you know what, that's something I want to be a part of. I'm ready. Go.
Okay. A choice in education. And there have been school programs that were started under President Bush that allowed their almost entirely black kids to choose the schools that they attend. Now, this is a very, very big issue for black parents across the country. And again, I will tell you what the most obvious thing is that if you look at the growth in income in the black community, the growth in employment, even during President Trump's administration, it was phenomenal. There were more people working. There were more people able to get jobs. And if you want to talk about something that matters to every community and to the black community in particular, I think that does.
Okay, we're going to go to number three here.
Number three.
As you know, our state's new tax on capital gains above $250,000 isn't even law yet, but it's already being challenged in the courts. The Freedom Foundation has filed a lawsuit saying that capital gains are clearly income, and when you tax them, it's an income tax, and that is unconstitutional. In the 30 seconds that we have left, where do you stand?
I think that I don't know if the law will be declared unconstitutional. That's based on the state constitution, not the federal constitution.
Right.
I don't know if it will or not. It might be. I do think that trying to raise taxes on capital gains hurts investment, hurts the economy, and it's one of those things that with better management, our state simply does not need. It's a bad idea.
Hey, Michael, man, we're running out of time. How many, outside of Tim Scott, how many black senators on that side in GOP?
There are no other black senators. There are two black members of the House.
Right.
Will Hurd, who was a black member from Texas, is another guy who I think has a great future in the GOP.
What a coincidence. Tim Scott being the only one. And oh my goodness, he's going to be the representative.
Hey, you know what? Start somewhere.
Start somewhere. Yeah. Michael, it is always a treat to have you on. Any big plans this weekend, brother?
I do. My brother's coming up for a visit. I have three younger brothers. They're the greatest guys in the world. And my youngest brother is coming to town, and we look forward to seeing him.
All right. Appreciate you, sir. Talk to you next week, buddy.
Thank you, my friend. Have a great, great weekend and not too much rain.
Yes, sir. Coming up next, Stacey Joe to help us understand what will the Seahawks do. And I got one problem with what the Seahawks have done in the past. It's the Gene Urso Show. Is the G and Ursula Show. It's Fresh Fridays. We got scenarios that'll be happening at 10:47. But right now, joining us from 710 ESPN, from the Jake and Stacey Show, Stacey Joe Ross.
Hi. I always wish, first of all, that I could join you guys for scenarios. And secondly, I apologize for the kind of like alcohol wipe smell right now. I saw them over there, and I'm using them to polish my shoes.
Yeah.
That's what we call it.
I know it's Fresh Friday, so I wanted to make sure I was like meeting your guys' expectations.
Looking spiffy.
Well, I'm glad you brought up expectations, because if there's one thing about Seahawk fans in the city of Seattle,
it's that their expectations are very low all the time.
Yeah.
Very achievable.
They're very high. What do we need to know?
Okay.
Considering they did not have a draft pick yesterday, they do have a draft pick today. That draft coverage starts at 4 o'clock Pacific time. What do we need to know?
What you need to know is the Seahawks have just one pick today. So the draft, if you just don't know anything about the draft is spread out over 3 days. Yesterday was the first round. Today is rounds 2 and 3. It starts at 4 p.m. And tomorrow, starting pretty early, I think like 9 a.m. or something, it's all the other rounds. It's 4 through 7. These rounds all take different times. So by the time you get to the 7th round, it's 4 minutes per selection. So it'll kind of like fly by. The Seahawks have one pick today, 2 picks tomorrow. If I said one thing you need to know, it's that the Seahawks are a team that hates having so few picks. John Schneider wants as many bites at the apple as possible. He wants to roll the dice as many times as he can. I'm fully expecting them to trade back.
Ursula, don't ask her anything about DK, okay?
Go ahead. Oh, okay.
What, we can talk about DK?
Well,
is there something
I'm
you
good.
Needed to know
No, what I want to know, not yet. Not yet. He needs to be out on the field before I start asking questions.
Sure,
however, there was some kind of interesting commentary made by Coach Pete Carroll and John Schneider.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted your take on it because apparently all this big to-do that we were making about trade rumors about Russell Wilson, it was just a media thing.
It's a media problem, Mark. It wasn't a problem for us because we knew the truth and we were in conversation to talk about stuff. And so because it's in the media, there are things that we need to address with players and, you know, friends and stuff like that. We got to talk through stuff, and that's just a normal course, and it's nothing to be blamed on the media. It's just you guys just speculated the way you could, did the best you could with it. And
he's so good.
We don't blame the media.
Yeah, see how he did that.
Yeah,
Pete. Go ahead. What do you
when I was in fourth grade, my band teacher, Mrs. Nelthrop, gave me the award called Flattery Will Get You Anywhere Award. I think that Pete Carroll would have surpassed me with this, with like Charm Will Get You Anywhere. Because let me tell you what, people could not wait to text in when this press conference was airing and be like, see, we told you guys, just a media thing you're inventing. And to so many of these people, I wanted to respond back, then why did Russell Wilson's agent go to Adam Schefter and correct an article that was in The Athletic? So an article in The Athletic, which is a great article, by the way, well-sourced by 3 very knowledgeable NFL reporters, came out and said Russell Wilson would be open to a trade to these 4 teams. Instead of just letting it sit there, because it's all fake anyways, his agent came out, went to Adam Schefter and said, so Russell Wilson, like, look, I mean, he hasn't demanded a trade, but if he did, it's not those 4 teams, it's these 4 teams. Like, that's literally what happened. So it's not something that is media generated. There are so many other things I would have talked about, but when the agent of your franchise quarterback comes out and says, this is where my client would be traded to, that is a story, Pete. Yeah. That is a story.
I love Pete Carroll, but I don't think anyone's believing that this was just a media
thing. No, it's not. Absolutely.
I mean, we could see it in Russell's face.
People who wanted it to be a media thing are believing it.
Okay, so let's speak about another quarterback. What is the deal with Aaron Rodgers?
Oh, man. Aaron Rodgers is a dramatic person who makes covering the NFL interesting because he is dramatic. I feel like he and Russell Wilson are kind of cut from the same cloth, and that Aaron Rodgers was making fun of Russell Wilson, like taking a shot at, like, well, I would never talk about my team. I mean, I would never, you know, say anything bad.
Yeah. But it's then, not just Jeopardy that wants
him. His move instead has been to be like, I don't know if the Packers want me. The Packers are like, of course we, what are you talking about? Of course we want you. You know what I mean?
But like, wasn't it another team that was like going to supposedly throw tons of money
at? A couple teams. So the San Francisco 49ers had the number 3 pick overall. Aaron Rodgers grew up a 49ers fan, wanted to be drafted by the 49ers, still held a grudge against McCarthy, who was, I think, the OC of the 49ers that passed on him before he went to coach for Green Bay. So that is a long held thing with the 49ers. He really wanted to play there. The 49ers were atop his list of teams he wanted to be traded to. So they reportedly called and just kind of asked about it. Like, what's the deal with Aaron Rodgers maybe wanting out? We're told we're not trading Aaron Rodgers. And then they were like, all right, use that 3rd round pick on Trey Lance.
Can we just address the elephant in the room? The Seahawks were 12-4 last year. Then afterwards, Russell Wilson comes out. He's talking about the offensive line. Then the agent says, well, if he were to leave, these would be the four teams. Obviously, they're back together. It was a media problem. Not really blaming the media, right, but, right. You know.
No, blaming the media.
Blaming the media. Okay, now that everything is fixed,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
Technically. Are the Seahawks going to be Super Bowl contenders this year?
They have a lot of moves to make if they want to be Super Bowl contenders. It doesn't help the Seahawks that they're in the toughest division in football, I'll tell you that right now.
Oh.
I think they have a lot of moves to make. I mean,
the
defense...
Are they getting more on the O-line? I mean...
I would not be surprised, Ursula, Bridget, if the Seahawks left the draft making all of their picks on defense, regardless of what Russell Wilson said. That's not a shot at Wilson. It's that you need to get faster on defense. You need to get younger on defense. Maybe you make a defensive scheme change. Maybe you go 3-4 instead of a 4-3. You need to make some kind of change.
Mm. What running backs? You know, since Marshawn Lynch has, you guys know Marshawn Lynch, beast
mode.
You've
heard the name.
Mm-hmm. Since he retired the first time, the Seahawks have drafted 7 running backs. Is there a particular position that the Seahawks are really good at drafting over the last few years? Give us one position group where you could say the Seattle Seahawks are really good at drafting this position.
Linebacker?
Oh, Jordan Brooks?
Huh? I like Jordan Brooks.
Huh? How come you don't seem confident, Trace? Stacey?
Gee!
That's the third time I've done that.
Third time.
You know.
It's not that I'm not confident. It's that he has played 1 year and he's following up 2 of the best players the Seahawks have ever drafted on defense with KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner. 2 phenomenal draft picks, though. So I'll give them that. Also, a second rounder and a fourth pick. You want to talk about, or a fourth round pick? You want to talk about value? It's finding those 2 guys out of the first round.
Ursula, here's the thing. I noticed that when Stacey Joe was explaining to us how the draft picks were going to go and how it was going to be 1 today and how it was all a draft. Why?
My eyes were glazing over.
Yeah,
why, Ursula?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I know, and my husband's interested in this, and honestly, I just want to know what's the end result? And is there anyone local, and is there anyone to get excited about? And
yeah. Ursula, are you someone that likes, like, the stories of the draft?
Oh,
like,
shit.
You're like,
yes.
I am much more interested
so,
in
know,
that.
I, okay, even me telling you about Aaron Rodgers, the interesting thing for me is I want to know why he has beef with his parents. Why he has been estranged from his parents.
Ursula, you and I can talk about this for hours. Have you seen JoJo season of The Bachelor?
Yes,
it's very
absolutely.
Important in the canon to this story I'm going to be talking about.
So those are the kinds of things. Yes, I need to know the stories. Otherwise, I don't care.
I will tell you that story, and then I'm going to tell you a story about Trey Lance.
Okay.
Ursula, just so you know, Stacey, whenever I tell a story, Ursula wants all the details.
Yes.
Like, she makes
yeah,
me
I get
go
it.
Deep. No. Wait, what were you wearing? Wait. What time was it? Was the sun
What'd you eat
setting?
That day?
Yeah. You have to remember, people are listening on the radio. They don't have the benefit of a picture, so you have to visualize. You have to help paint the picture for them.
Thank you, Stacey Joe.
Thanks, guys.
Have a great weekend. Hey, coming up next, we do scenarios. You guys are listening to the G and Ursula Show. It is the G and Ursula Show. Happy Fresh Fridays. We got agree to disagree happening at 11:06, but right now it is time for scenarios brought to you by Farrah.com.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
I need to know how long parents are expected to pay for kids' flights to come home and see mom and dad.
Okay.
We always paid for our daughter's expenses when she was in college. Now she's out. On her own, has a job, and makes good money. She's 24 and doing well, but every time she comes home, we have continued to pay for her flight. She makes arrangements, and my wife reimburses her because she handles our money. Yesterday, my daughter called and asked if mom was going to reimburse her for the flight. I had no idea, so I asked my wife about it, and she said, no, I'm not going to anymore. She's an adult. Makes a good living, and needs to start paying for her own expenses. I have not said anything to my daughter, so what do I do? Do I reimburse my daughter behind my wife's back?
No.
I think the least we should do is pay for this trip and then tell her that we won't be doing it again in the future and why. But then I'm afraid she won't come home much anymore, and I'll miss her too much. I really need help on this topic. 98973 is the State Roofing text line. Ursula, You up to bat first, my
this
friend.
This one hits home.
Hey.
This one hits home because we just bought our son a ticket to return from Boulder.
Shout out to Eric on his way. Eric's on his way home. When Eric come home? Next week?
Next week. Okay. Next Thursday.
What you got?
So, and we paid for it because he's not working right now. He is going to school. He will be working over the summer, and he's really good about paying for his own thing when he has the money to. But right now, he doesn't have that money. So, that all said, our older son does have a great job, and he's been working for over a year. I would not pay for him. Thankfully, he is now back in Seattle. But if he was still in L.A., I would not be paying for him to come back. He should pay for that.
Right.
However, I understand for parents. I totally get it, because you don't want to lose that tie.
Right.
There's an added incentive if you're paying for that ticket to
they
come
will
back,
come home.
Then they will come home.
Right.
And I totally get it. But I think it's time for when your child is able to do it, your
right.
adult child
yeah. Yeah.
is able to do it, that they should do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same with vacations, too. If you want to go together as a family vacation, I know a lot of families will continue to pay for their adult children, you know, until they're in their mid-20s.
Wait. So
yes.
you mean to tell me
yes.
on them vacations?
Yes.
You got to pay for their hotel room?
Yes. Not you don't have to.
Or they got to go stay in our room?
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Do you know that
reunited
the last time?
Reunited.
No. And, oh. Do you know the last time we were in Hawaii? I'd love it.
No.
And in fact,
I don't know. I don't like where you're going.
No.
You didn't all stay in the same room.
Oh, yeah, we did.
No.
Oh, we did. We had two queen beds. We all stayed. And you know what? It was bonding.
That's not a vacation. How is it a vacation everybody else in the room?
It was one of my favorite vacations ever because they were adults. We all could do our own thing when we wanted to do our own thing. This is in Honolulu, and when we wanted to get together, we could. And then, you know, yeah, sleeping. Everyone has their devices, so you could tune each other.
Chris, you got about 30 seconds. What you think, bro?
I think if you want to see me, you got to pay for it. You're going to have to fly me out. But you're welcome. You're welcome to come visit me. My parents can come out here, and I'll make time.
Chris. Okay. So let me tell you guys what's going on in my household right now. Right now. So Zion, my youngest, turns 18 on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Zion had $15, $15.40-something some change in his bank account on Monday.
I don't know that he wants that detail out there.
Oh no! I'm gonna put his business in the street.
Okay.
They're $15, like 40-some cents in his. And I said, Zion, just so you know, come Sunday, I give you no more money.
What?
No more money. Now,
he turns the magical
18. So his mom, my mom, his grandmother, sends him birthday money.
Uh-huh.
That's $100. I said, oh, call your grandmother, make sure you thank her. So he's got $100. Boom. Here comes the weekend. He's going to get some birthday money. After that, I'm done. Dad is done giving money. You get no more money.
Well,
he needs
to get a job.
Look here. He's got to get jobs. He's got to get everything. He's got to go hustle. My thing is you...
Just turning 18, though. See, I don't look at 18 as this magical number.
I do. You want to know why it's magical?
Really?
You want to know why it's magical?
Why?
Because you can get your FICO now, your credit score.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So
18.
And how often do we talk about how hard it is to establish credit? So I will still pay for this, that, or the other thing if it allows my child to make payments on something else. So like, for example, buying their first car. So then they can establish that credit. But you try to... Help him if you can.
You know what I did?
I know.
I put them on my credit cards.
Ah.
I put them on my credit card. So now on Sunday when he turns 18, he has established credit already.
Yeah.
That's how we did it. But yeah.
Smart.
But my answer, no. I'm not paying for you. And if you don't want to come and see your dad, then you know what? You're selfish.
Too bad.
You're selfish. How dare you be a kid and a child or in your 20s and now all of a sudden you don't want to come see me because I ain't paying for it? What kind of kids are those? Hey, coming up next, it is time for all of us to agree to disagree. I'm sure Ursula will be disagreeing with me, and of course you will too. Hope you guys are having a happy, fresh Fridays. It is the Gene Ursula Show.